is an interview with Louis Farren at his home on Siesta Key on March 22nd,
1987. I came to Stony Brook in 19... Oh, should I talk?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah,
talk right in there.
Yeah. Okay, I came to Stony Brook in 1964. Now, this might be important. Stanley Ross, who was instrumental in my appointment at Stony Brook as full professor and chairman of the anthropology department, got in touch with me by letter when I was doing field work in Mexico, and was an associate professor of anthropology at the University of Pittsburgh. He got in touch with me in 1963, the end of 1963. You want some little tidbits of feelings and emotions?
Yes, go ahead. Freewheeling on this.
I immediately got out a map of the eastern United States, a little map of the eastern United States, which I had with me when I went to Mexico, and tried to find Stony Brook on the Long Island insert on the map, and discovered that it was about halfway between New York City and the end of Long Island.
I mean,
just like the way that the machine was there. Are we going?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I wrote to Stanley Ross that I would be returning temporarily to the United States to renew my visa, and at the same time wrote a friend of mine who was teaching at Columbia University at the time to sound him out about Stony Brook, its prospects, and whether I would become isolated if I made the move from Pittsburgh. I wrote, after returning from the States, to Toluca. I wrote to Stanley Ross and said that I was interested in the position, that I would be returning for good to Pittsburgh in several months, and that I would be interested in getting in touch with him then. I received no answer to my letter, but did get a telephone call from Stanley Ross at the University of Pittsburgh shortly after I arrived. At this time, we agreed that I would respond favorably to a letter that he said he would send me, inviting me to come to Stony Brook to be looked over for the position of chairman for a newly established department of anthropology. Now, I think that takes us through question four, unless you...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How old were you at the time? I was 30 years old when this began, and when I was finally hired by Stony Brook, I was 41 years old when I became active as chairman and taught my first course at Stony Brook. Number five, who interviewed you for the position at Stony Brook? The most impressive thing is that I was met at the fledgling airport, MacArthur Airport, by what seemed to be about 12 or 15 faculty members from Stony Brook. I felt like a visiting dignitary with my new attaché case in hand. And went to lunch with some of these people, including Stanley Ross, and Hugh Cleveland from the History Department, and others, which I won't try to remember now. I can think of a few names. David Fox, and others. I'll think of them later. And we went to lunch. At which time I can say the interview began in a very informal manner. And that after that, I eventually met Carl Hartzell, who was then the administrative head of the university. Spoke to him for a while in the company of Stanley Ross. And then there were lunches and at least one dinner during which informal interviewing took place. I remember also having met, again rather informally, Ben Nelson, who was chairman of the Department of Sociology, which had formerly been the Department of Sociology and Anthropology. And our interview was quite friendly. And I recall one thing that I noted at that time, and which since that time became very important in the development of the new anthropology department. Ben Nelson told me that he didn't agree that a social anthropologist was a sociologist with a backpack who went to the remote corners of the world. Stop for a moment.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, let's see.
All right.
During the interview with Ben Nelson, which was across the desk in his office, he brought up the anthropological library, which he made a condition of the transition of anthropology from the sociology department to an independent department. This took me a bit by surprise. I am not a library man. I did not intend to develop archaeology or physical anthropology when I came to Stony Brook. And I immediately felt saddled by a responsibility for which I had little interest and no talent. But this was in line with Ben Nelson's idea that anthropologists were not really social anthropologists, even though they call themselves sometimes sociologists, in the British tradition. What Ben Nelson seemed to want as an offshoot of the sociology anthropology department was a Boasian four-field anthropology department. Indeed, this was one of
four-field.
This means what was called cultural anthropology and has since been called social stroke cultural anthropology, cultural stroke social anthropology. Both great misnomers indicating wide theoretical differences in methodology, differences in goals, etc. But cultural anthropology was one field that Ben Nelson had in mind. Physical anthropology was another field of anthropology. Archaeology was another traditional field, and linguistics is the fourth traditional field. Ben Nelson envisaged a department of anthropology covering the four major fields. Now, the major fields were developed at Columbia University by Franz Boas, and therefore the whole schmear may be characterized as Boasian anthropology, or United States Boasian cultural anthropology, and broken down and rearranged in any number of ways. but clearly distinguished in the minds of British-oriented social anthropologists from the kind of anthropology which at that time and for decades before and after produced some of the most meticulous and useful monographs ever written by anthropologists. And this was out of the British tradition, which even Ben Nelson was unaware of, which I find hard to believe because he was an erudite man, or wanted to overlook or not take into full consideration. I don't think I was the kind of anthropologist Ben Nelson fully approved of.
What kind were you?
I was a British-oriented social anthropologist, self-taught, while doing field work, because I became aware that my training at Columbia was inadequate to the kind of understanding I hoped to achieve in the field. In my mind, at that time and now, over a 30-year period, is that the British anthropologists were the most productive, made the most sense, whereas the Boasians did not. The Boasians have produced monographs which I am unable to use in my research. Okay? Now, I don't want to get too far afield on that now. Ben Nelson, I would say, in answer to the question who interviewed you for the position here, was the man who should have known most about what I was up to and what I stood for. Now, he either did or he didn't, and if he didn't, that's just ignorance. If he did, that's deviant. Because he sat in me with a museum I never should have had, I never intended to have.
A museum?
And museums, there are no such things as museums of social anthropology. Because social anthropology deals with cultural values and ideas and social organizations which cannot be seen. They can be read about. But what an anthropological museum contains are artifacts. Skulls and bones on the one hand and pop shards on the other. And I had nothing like this in mind when I came to Stony Brook to develop the department. And I can see, in retrospect, that I got my I got in trouble from the very beginning. Now, Stanley Roth was also a principal interviewer. He shuffled me around the Stony Brook area, looking at houses and taking me here and there, and finally deposited me for the night at Sunwood. Now, this spills over into question number six. Why did you come? I woke up early at Sunwood. The sun was up, barely. I went down to the water's edge. It happened to be high tide, and most of the horrible boulders were covered, and it was easy walking. And I looked out and thought, oh boy, this is where I want to live. Now that is one reason I came to Sunny. I was raised on Long Island. Always appealed to me, and I had the feeling that I was coming home. This was not a major factor in my decision, but it just made everything else seem better. Now, what factors were most important in your decision? I came from the University of Pittsburgh at a time when that department was driven by faction. And I was unhappy. I thought that coming to St.
study burn.
Which gives me the opportunity of forming a department of my own along the lines I thought were most important, and the ability to hire faculty whom I either knew personally or knew about because of their good reputation in anthropology. At that time, I wanted to form a nucleus of social anthropologists to get the department going. I was told then that, this is spilling over into seven, that my mission was to develop a department able to go into graduate work and that I should use a period of 5 years as my guide. So I thought that in the first few years of recruitment, I could hire social anthropologists who had worked in North America, South America, Southeast Asia, perhaps India, and certainly Africa. And within a few years, all of this was achieved. But that's getting a bit ahead of the story.
Well, you had the funds. You had support, financial support, the lines and so forth with which to do that.
No, I was promised, but I didn't get what I was promised. And that didn't bother me either because I didn't expect everything. I have a set of budget statements over several years, which I will let you look at and copy if you wish, indicating what was asked for and what was received.
Okay.
Now, in my thinking at that time, I was looking for faculty who, like myself, could cover in an introductory course, since we were dealing only with undergraduates, at least for the first 5 years, cover the four major fields of anthropology. And I considered myself competent to cover rather well everything except physical anthropology. For that reason, one of my first appointments was Peg Wheeler, who, although having done social anthropological fieldwork and trained under George Peter Murdoch, who is a social anthropologist at Yale, as a social anthropologist, she had a background in biology, human evolution, and physical anthropology. And I immediately turned over the introductory course to her because she could fill that gap. So my intention was to give the students who took an introductory course, a one-year introductory course in anthropology, a coverage of four fields with an emphasis on social anthropology, which would be a lead-in to any either 100 level or 2, 3, and 400 level courses. I don't think we have 400 level courses. I think they're just 1, 2, 3. Or 300 level undergraduate seminars. That was my intention. In answer to question 7, what was your understanding of the purposes behind the creation of Stony Brook? I'm going to defer that for a moment. What was the vision being transformed into reality? See, I'm thinking of now in the first few days of my interviewing and during the first few months or the first semester of teaching. I'd rather put my answer to question number 7 later.
All right. Okay.
Because we come right into number 8, give us your impressions of Stony Brook when you first came.
Yeah. All right.
So I'd rather come with that. During my 2 days of being interviewed at Stony Brook took place at a round table luncheon in a local restaurant. Yes, in with a number of department chairmen present. And I recall that one of the tasks I took upon myself at the time was an explicit definition of social anthropology, cultural anthropology, and the differences between them. I remember a lot of heads nodding, but almost no questions. I remember speaking through most of the main core, and I didn't eat much at that luncheon. When I came out of there, Stanley Ross took me on another tour of the area and continued the interview. And I told him more of what I meant about the distinction between cultural anthropology, which is a four-field approach, and social anthropology, which emphasized social relations as it was being taught at Harvard, the Institute of Social Anthropology at Oxford, and in the Department of Anthropology at Chicago. These were at that time and continue to be the three main centers of social anthropology in the world. I wanted to make Stony Brook something like the best of all of these departments. Stanley Ross seemed to agree that this was a possibility, but he would not go along with my request to label the department as a Department of Social Anthropology. His explanation was that, in effect, Ben Nelson wouldn't approve. Now, do I have to explain that further?
Well,
he didn't say much more about it.
Yeah.
Ben Nelson wouldn't approve. After my interview with Ben Nelson, there was a tacit understanding between Stanley and me that Ben Nelson felt as though anthropology had been torn away from him. Ben Nelson considered himself an anthropologist as much as a sociologist and an historian, and was unhappy with the creation of the anthropology department. And this is one of the unhappy people Stanley Ross left behind, and which the anthropology department had to contend with when Stanley went to Texas.
Do you remember offhand when Stanley went to Texas?
I think it was 69.
69?
I think it was before I went on sabbatical.
I see.
Because after I came back from sabbatical in 71, and was no longer chairman, things had changed. The organization of the university had changed in ways which made it rather difficult to get the ear of the dean immediately. Now, I don't know who took over from that. I don't think it was Wiseman or that early. I just don't know. I still can't remember.
All right.
But
I was
away
from 69 and to 70.
Yeah.
On my sabbatical.
I didn't have that, because Stanley wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And I dealt briefly before leaving the chairmanship. For the first few weeks after I returned from sabbatical, I dealt with Charlie Huffman. And that's about the extent of my recollection.
Right.
I thought harder. But anyway, I had the sense that once Stanley Ross left, the anthropology department no longer received the kind of support that he had given us. But other things happened. We were beginning to get into a budget crunch. And it was during these latter years of my chairmanship that our department received a zero library budget for the year.
Yeah.
Zero. Mm-hmm. And let me come back to that. One of the reasons I was interested in coming here is that Stanley said I had carte blanche in buying books for the anthropology department. And I, at least on paper, bought over $100,000 worth of books in the first year that I was here for the anthropology department. And these were profits. These were profits. Now, a little overlapping. The purposes behind the creation of the University of Study, but I still got to hold off on that one. But the vision, my part of the new University of Study book was to develop a new department of social anthropology, which would be closely linked to the department of sociology from which it emerged, and also to the department of history, which is not part of the interest of British social anthropology. British social anthropology is historical because they felt that the Borazians, when trying to use history to understand societies in this part of the world, made terrible errors, resulting in misunderstanding. But I wanted to bring the historical aspect back and into social anthropology under a much more controlled manner than the Boasians did. And that is simply by using actual written records. Boasians paid lip service to historical reconstruction that seemed to a man never to have worked in any archive. It was curious, but seems that's part of the problems of growing. And one of the results of growing up was the separation of social anthropology from the rest of anthropology. And I thought that I could do this on the Study Book campus and bring it into line with solid historical research. And I was therefore received double support from the Dean of the Social Sciences, who himself was an historian, and who stayed with the new Department of Anthropology. Now, you can consider this both a practical consideration as well as a hope for the future of the development of anthropology, not only as Study Book, but by the Study Book image in other newly developing institutions, graduate departments in anthropology around the country. This was a period of growth in anthropology. There was a tail end of it, as it turned out, but it was anthropology departments were growing by leaps and bounds. I can stop for a second and then. Because I have to think about. I left out so much of
Take your time.
Okay. But this machine keeps going. It doesn't stop when I stop.
No. I can turn this off for a little while.
Yeah. Why don't you do that?
All right.
There's one thing I should add. When I was being interviewed for the position of Study Book, I found that everyone was very friendly. There were no trick questions. There was no attitudes of superiority and anything of that sort. Several faculty members at that roundtable luncheon wanted to know something of my background and presumably had not read my CV. So I told everybody for the first time that I had started teaching, full-time teaching, in 1959, and had gone to Mexico for a period of a year and a half, during which time I was at the University of Pittsburgh, but on leave, and was now at Stony Brook. Being considered for a full professorship with only 3.5 years of teaching behind me. And some of the people were startled at this rapid rise. I didn't think anything of it at the time, but later on I found out that some of the department chairmen thought that I was too green for the position of chair, that I should have had more experience at administration. The thing that it was in my favor, I think, in Stanley Ross's mind, was that I developed an interdisciplinary program while I was at the, what is now called California State University. An interdisciplinary program involving anthropology, history, sociology, geography, and economics.
One of the state universities of California?
Yeah. Los Angeles State College is what it was called when I was there, I think. Before I left, it was... I said it was difficult to remember.
UCLA.
No.